Welcome everybody, this is the Office 365 Developer Patterns and Practices webcast, and this time we will have a webcast with Jonathan Huss, who's going to actually show a great sample which was part of the January 2016 release, the BNP release, which was released recently in the GitHub and also in the dev.office.com. My name is Vesa Juvonen, I'm a Senior Program Manager in Office 365 Engineering, and Jonathan, please do your introductions as well.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Huss, and I'm a Premier Field Engineer at Microsoft, and I focus on Office 365 and Azure development.
Excellent. I think this time, like mentioned, Jonathan is going to lead the presentation, and I'm going to interrupt and try to make him feel awkward with my questions. So I'm going to act again as a person who's asking if you're moving too fast or whatever. I'm going to interrupt you and ask questions around to topics. But Jonathan, please take it away, and yeah. I'm going to ask questions then. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks very much. So the help desk demo was built after a conversation that Vesa and I had around, how do we take some of the technologies of Office 365 and Azure that maybe aren't so SharePoint focused and build them all into a single application that can demonstrate some of those techniques. And so the help desk demo is built in ASP.NET MVC. It's a single page application, which means everything is driven, via AJAX and calls back into the MVC controller, and then the controllers do work against the various Office 365 or Azure resources. The demo uses quite a few technologies that we'll discuss in a minute, but really the idea was to look into how can we take things like the graph and SQL Azure and Yammer and some of those bits and hook them all together into a single application that looks something like what someone might build in a potentially real world solution to try and solve a real world problem. And as we go through this, we're intentionally not going to get too carried away with the code, because all of the coding samples are available for people to look at and to review in depth, as needed. So not only is the sample not overly complicated, just try and keep this as focused on really trying to get people thinking and get gears turning in terms of how can we utilize all the resources that we have available to build these applications.
And just a side note on that one, obviously what's deep dive is always a relative to the person who's listening. So for some people who are not familiar what you're going to actually go through, this might be a deep dive, but then some people might feel that it's not a deep dive. Yeah, but I think the key point is it's not necessarily production ready. It's not as polished as it should be in a production, but that's understandable. And that's what we want to do with BNP. We don't want to have too complex scenarios too much, at least. We do have few production ready stuff there as well to make sure that the field can easily adapt on these technologies. And that's really the key point. And I think this is a brilliant demo and brilliant sample, which is showing excellent technologies around where we are heading gradually with SharePoint Online and Office 365 as well.
Yeah, well, and just by the nature of the fact that it's using, six or seven different technologies, there is some complexity involved, right? But certainly not as complex as it could be.
Yeah, absolutely.
So speaking of technologies, there are quite a few. So as I mentioned, it's built in ASP.NET MVC. And the sample, of course, is just code, but for the demo today, it's actually running out in Azure as a web app. And so, that's a more real-world sort of scenario that it's actually running in what could be a production-like environment. So data resources, largely the Microsoft Graph, the new graph that's been released to GA. Last month, I guess. And then, a standard SQL Azure database provides some of the information there. The application itself is secured by Azure Active Directory, so when the person tries to log in, Azure AD is doing the authentication for that user. And then there are also some bits that are retrieved from a SharePoint Online list as well as a Yammer newsfeed.
Like Jonathan said when we started the recording, it seems to be that the blue is the color of the logos in Microsoft, especially in that slide.
Yep. So not too long after Vesa and I had this conversation about putting together an application like this, I got out my trusty whiteboard and marker and just kind of drew out an idea. And this whiteboard picture here is the result of that idea. And although the final demo and application didn't turn out to be exactly like this, this largely illustrates still how things work today. So we'll take a look at the actual application in a minute, but it's built into four quadrants, and each quadrant pulls data from a different data source, and then on the back end, you know, those data sources are merged together and work together to do different things. So, for example, when a user sends an email to the help desk, that ends up at the help desk mailbox, which the application reads via the graph/messages URL segment. When the help desk operator clicks on that email, the email details is opened, which also reads from the messages segment, and then pulls from the groups segment as well to find our list of operators and to grab those users' images. The top right quadrant, which is our open support tickets, that comes from our SQL Azure database, and then the two quadrants at the bottom, like I mentioned, come from SharePoint Online and from Yammer as well. And so lots of arrows moving around to kind of show, you know, how these connections occur and where data comes from and how the screen itself is populated.
So, great graphics and great drawing. But I think actually it makes more sense when we're saying the sample in practice, no doubt.
Yeah. So let's do that, right? Let's stop looking at slides and let's look at the actual application.
Yippee, some code.
So this is the application, the help desk application. And as I mentioned, there are four quadrants, just like in the screenshot here, in the whiteboard drawing that we had before. And this one in the top left is what goes out, reads the mailbox. The top right one, again, of course, comes from SQL Azure. And then there are the two from the bottom that this one pulls from Yammer. The other one pulls from SharePoint Online Announcements. So to illustrate an actual scenario here, we're going to pretend that this user has an issue, that their badge doesn't work anymore, and they're going to send an email to our operations help desk mailbox. And if we send this off, we'll wait just a couple of seconds, and it should show up again here. It should show up here in our mail messages. There it is. So this is the message that we just sent, that my badge doesn't work anymore. And if I click on that, the window opens up, and of course this is the same content as the email that I sent. And so if I click this user box down here, so this box here is populated based on the groups URL segment of the graph, and we've gone out and we've retrieved the membership of a security group within Azure. And these three people are the members. So my user account has a picture profile, the other two do not, so they get the fancy silhouette. But let's select this user, which is me, and assign this as a support ticket to my account. Now this screen over here comes from SQL Azure, but it's only loading the tickets that I have open to me. So if we were to have assigned that to another one of our operators, of course it would have shown up on their screen and not mine. So if I click on my badge doesn't work, you can see the same content from the email, and can if we close the ticket, then shortly it'll be removed from my list of things to do. Down here is our Yammer feed. So if we take a look at the operations Yammer group, so if we put a new message in here, I'm doing this off screen here. This is badges are broken. Please be patient. If I post that, you can see that it shows up here. So this is a real-time feed, real-time updates of our Yammer feed. The other thing that we can do, we'll take a look at the operations SharePoint page. And I'm going to do this side by side, hopefully, so that we can see this. We're going to add a new announcement here as well, that the same message as we put into Yammer. Be patient. We'll save that. And you can see here that that announcement was added as well. So the idea here is that our help desk operators can have real-time information about what's going on based on our operations teams. Do they know about problems? Are they providing us information that that will help us kind of proactively work with our users to provide feedback or information as necessary? So that's largely how the help desk itself works. So what do you think? Take a look at some code.
Let's have a look on some code. It looks really nice, and I personally I really like the way it's refreshing itself. So it's a single page app, and it's showing actually the technologies how to do that as well. So, but let's have a look on how it's actually built.
Okay.
Really interested to see that.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, it's a single page application that's largely driven by JavaScript and Ajax, and so when the page loads, what actually occurs is, so three functions are called to load the three panes, the top two panes and the pane on the right. The Yammer pane is automatically loaded. It's just embedded from Yammer directly, so we don't need to do anything special to get that information to load. That's built into the Yammer product. But the other three we need to load ourselves. And so each of those functions is called, and then it's set on a timer to run every 5 seconds to make sure that the screen is updated regularly. And in fact, when we were looking at the demo, we could see where there was a little bit of a delay, and that was a result of the 5,000 milliseconds here. We certainly could change that around to get a better refresh rate. Each of these functions is largely the same. It's just a typical Ajax call out of JavaScript, which calls into the MVC controller. And then when the data is returned, it generates the HTML and loads it into each of the respective quadrants of the application. So if we take a look at the email controller, for example, you can see we create a graph helper, and it seems like all of these samples and demos have helpers, right? So this is no different. That graph helper has a function called get new email messages. And then the result of that function is returned as JSON. It's ordered by a timestamp, but then just returned as JSON so that the Ajax on the client side can retrieve and parse that information as needed. So if we go look at the email messages function, we can see that it calls into the users / and then the help desk email address, and then mail folders, inbox, and messages. from there, the data is returned as JSON from the graph, and it's parsed into a business object that we can use that makes sense to us for what our application is trying to do. And certainly in a production or full scale application, you'd want to parse this information out inside that business model, but for the sake of this demo, we did it here so that we could see what's happening. That data is then returned and parsed on the client side and displayed. And I think one of the really interesting things about this particular graph helper is this query graph function. And so if we go take a look at that, so we can see that there's one required parameter, and this is the segment within the graph that we're going to try and hit. Before, when we were looking at the other function, we saw it was users, / email address, whatever. And that's what this is, right? This is telling the application, where do we need to go to retrieve the information that we're after? many of the segments are just get, right? We're just trying to read information to display it wherever. And so by default, we're not going to require an HTTP method here, right? So we're just going to take it as a null, and if it is null, we'll set it to get. But if we're going to hit one of the post or patch segments, we do need to take an HTTP method in to describe how we need to call those segments. Additionally, we may need to send some content, post some content as well. So we take those three parameters. Only the first one is required. From there, the function builds out the HTTP client and the message that's going to call into the graph. And it specifically requests JSON content back. And then it also retrieves an access token, which we'll talk about in just a minute. Once it has the access token, it injects it as the authorization header, which is part of the graph specification. And then again, if there's content that needs to be posted, it adds it as JSON as well, and then sends the request off. the response that comes back, assuming the response is okay, it's parsed back into JSON and returned out to whatever the calling function is to do whatever needs to be done with that particular data.
That's actually a quite nice function, a generalized function, which is taking care of the access token handling and all of that. So that's pretty cool.
Yep, makes things really easy, right? That don't need to try and rethink this over and over again. We can just pass a simple endpoint in, and it does all the work for us. So it's pretty handy. So if we take a look at this get access token, personally, I think the authentication to Azure and getting these access tokens is by far the hardest part of all of this, and certainly the hardest part for me to wrap my head around originally. And so again, have tried to reduce that down into something fairly simple. And so the get access token function is here, and it looks to see if there's already a token, and if there's not, it goes and gets a new one, or if our token has expired, it goes and gets a new one. Again, we have a helper to help with authentication. And so the authentication helper has a get token function, and this authentication helper is used by the graph stuff here, but it's also used when trying to call into SharePoint, right? Because it uses the same processes for retrieving a token. So we can go look at that token, the get token function, and in this case, it takes a resource, which in the code we were just looking at, of course, is the graph resource. We could be passing a SharePoint resource or any of the other, Azure application resource IDs as well. This application does authentication via a certificate, and as far as I know, Vesa, you can correct me if I'm wrong, the only way to do app-only authentication to Azure, to the SharePoint Online resources, is with a certificate. I don't believe username and passwords are accepted for Azure here, which was an interesting...
That's correct, yes.
That took me longer than I care to admit to figure out when I was working on this. So in this case, it gathers the certificate from the store, and this is an important thing too, that the certificate is actually stored in the personal store, because when we deploy this to Azure, this is where Azure is going to build its own kind of internal store, if you will, of certificates, and so this code doesn't have to change when it goes out to Azure, right? It'll work just fine so long as we configure Azure correctly as well. So it finds the certificate, passes that certificate up into Azure as our authentication mechanism, and then the token is returned. Make sense?
Makes sense. Absolutely makes sense. And that's a good point on the certification store. So essentially, when you're uploading the certificate in the Microsoft Azure, it's using that code is gonna give you the same certificate. So there's no exception. Are you doing this in a debugging mode or in a production, in quotes, in a production mode?
Right. Cool. Yep. Works exactly the same. Okay. So if we take a look at, let's say, the support ticket controller. So this is the controller that goes out, and it does the work against SQL Azure, right? So this is just a standard SQL Azure database. In fact, there's only a single table that just holds some information in there for what we're trying to do here. So the function that loads that top right quadrant for our support tickets is this function here, the get support tickets for user. And this is using Entity Framework to reach back into that SQL Azure database. And normally in a production application, you would separate all of this. You absolutely would not put the database call directly in the controller. But for the simplicity of the demo, it's right here. It's really straightforward. It just creates the database. The database context here, and then calls in database.supportTickets, and it finds. So this generates a SQL query, right, where it's where the support ticket is assigned to our current user, which of course was authenticated via Azure, and that the ticket is open. any of those tickets that it finds, converts those to JSON and ships them out to the client side to be rendered on the interface. When we open up a particular support ticket, works exactly the same way, except that rather than using where, it just does a find based on the support ticket ID. So that's pretty quick, right? Because the ID columns are certainly indexed. The most interesting function in this entire controller, though, is when we assign the support ticket. So this is when we clicked in the email in the top left window, it opened up, we selected a user, and we clicked assign. This is the function that's called. The first thing that happens is it actually creates our new database object, right, the support ticket, and then adds it to the database and saves that. But the other thing that occurs, and we didn't show this, I guess, in the demo before, is that the email itself is updated to have a category of assigned, and that's just done via the graph. It's surprisingly simple to do that, and so, you know, when the ticket is assigned to a person, the email is marked assigned, and then later when the ticket is closed, we go through in as well and mark the email message as closed so that we're not retrieving those again. So if we go look at that email message assigned function, it's just like we saw before, where we're calling into a user / help desk email address / messages / message ID, right? It's a simple URL. But in this case, we're going to use a patch HTTP method, and we're going to pass in some content that is simply JSON, where we're setting categories as equal to assigned. Similarly, when we're closing the message, we can do that. Closing the support ticket, sorry. It works exactly the same way. We just set the category to assigned, and that way, in the mailbox, should somebody come along and look at messages directly or something like that in the mailbox, they can tell that those messages have been assigned to a particular help desk operator, and what the state is of any of those things. Any questions on that? Makes sense so far?
Absolutely makes sense for me. What I really like about this sample is that this is relatively simple, simplistic mm-hmm. when I think of it. It's demonstrating greatly the simplicity of accessing the information in a graph and updating the information using the graph as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's this interesting thing that after you figure something out, it's really easy, right? But while we're trying to figure this stuff out, it can be very hard. And that, I think that's certainly the case here too, that many of these things, whether it's reading, SharePoint stuff or graph stuff or whatever, when you first sit down with that blank canvas and try and figure this out for the very first time, boy, it's challenging. Lots of beating your head on the desk, lots of aspirin. And so the idea here was really to try and not complicate things, not make it too production-like, not make it hard to understand, something that folks could really, work through line by line and understand how things are occurring so that it's, easy enough to reproduce themselves.
Absolutely, and avoiding the fact that they need to bang their head against the wall, because we absolutely want people to reuse this knowledge and to be able to use the graph in their customizations as well.
Yep, that's exactly it. No point in all of us having headaches, right?
Yes, indeed, indeed.
So the last controller is the announcements controller, and this reads from a SharePoint list, which we saw. It's an announcements list, and it works largely the same as the others that you've seen. There's a SharePoint helper. That gets the announcements, converts that into JSON, and returns it back to the UI. So if we go and look at that get announcements function, this stuff is, if anybody has done work against SharePoint or whatever, this is all very familiar, right? This looks the same whether it's here or whether it's in applications that don't use Azure AD for authentication. But it just generates a client context to that particular operation SharePoint site. Loads the list, find the lists where the title is announcements, and just retrieves all the information back, and then in this case converts it to a business object as well with a title and a timestamp. And that's it. That's it for the SharePoint work. So literally pulling the information out of SharePoint was, what do we have here, about 10 lines of code, something like that.
That's pretty easy, OS.
Yeah. And again, we were talking about before that authentication helper. There is a get token. It's the same get token function that we saw over in the graph stuff. So this is all shared code. You only have to write this one time, and then you can use it for all of your Azure AD secured resources. So And I think that's
It's
probably it
true.
as far as the code goes.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Can I go back on the still quickly, just looking under the UI one more time, showing
Sure.
the UI capability. If you open up oh, where's our tickets? Come on.
Yeah, refresh the page, see.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
There we go. So just to open up, how did you do, just out of curiosity, how did you do the pop-up functionality? It's just a
Yeah, so it's all jQuery, right? It's just a standard UI dialog. It's built in. I didn't have to do anything special. There's some special code to make this work, but it's interesting if you look at some of the websites around in the world, and you look at these fonts and you look at the rounded corners and stuff, you can absolutely tell when they're jQuery UI dialog pop-ups because they all look the same. But that's it. Yeah, it's just a regular old jQuery dialog, and then this HTML is generated in the AJAX calls that we saw before.
Yeah, absolutely
So
makes sense. That
that's
makes
it.
sense.
Yeah, that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Cool. And coming back on quickly on the Yammer one, like Jonathan mentioned, that's just embedded in Yammer. So that's just embedding in the HTML. If you quickly want to show that one,
Oh,
it's
sure.
the most simplistic fellow in here.
It is. We'll see if I can. It's been a while since I've even looked at it. I have to remember. Yeah, so if you, and we can look at this in just a minute, but if you go to the Yammer group, right, it actually will give you this code. You don't even have to figure this out on your own.
Sure.
But it'll give you a pop-up with this information in here. It also gives you a div, which is this embedded feed div here. I chose to move it to fit into my UI a little better. But that's it. It's what do you got here, about 8 or 9 lines of code or something like that, and that's all it takes to embed the Yammer group. So in fact, if we go look, there's a link right down here in the bottom right, embed this feed in your site. If you click on that, there's that exact same HTML and JavaScript that we looked at a minute ago. You copy and paste this directly into your website, and that's it. The feed will load. It's very, very easy.
Wouldn't it be kind of cool to think through that at some point we would have similar capabilities of embedding views for SharePoint and Outlook and all of the other stuff which we're showing here as well? I'm just thinking out loud. Who knows?
Sure.
But it would make a lot of sense because then people wouldn't have to even write the needed code what you did in this particular case. It's just embedding the right things and then hooking in their client-side operations on that one.
Well, you
So.
know what? And in fact, when I was working on this, the SharePoint announcements window in the bottom right, this one here, that was the first path I took, was to see if we could actually embed the announcements list directly in here, and that turned out to be far more painful than I expected.
Yes,
And
indeed. Yeah, that doesn't work at all.
no,
That's
and
true.
so fairly quickly punted that and said, well, we'll just do it ourselves and load it right in here. And I guess the nice thing about loading it yourself, I didn't do very much here, but you can control all of the UI and CSS stuff fairly easily, right? And make it look like the rest of your application.
Sure. But when I think of it, it would make a lot of sense to have an embedding capability within the SharePoint as well. So you would be able to embed library views and list views and all of that to other applications with all of this single sign-on going on with Office 365 anyway.
Yeah, that would be great.
Just that would be great. Yeah, we'll see if we will never get there with SharePoint. But anyway.
Yeah. So I think, let's see, we were doing the demo. I think that's it. So this is the two of us. Feel free to reach out to me, certainly on Twitter, if you need help or assistance or have any questions working through this help desk demo.
Yep, and please do remember the Yammer group, the Bad Patterns and Practices Yammer group at aka MS Office Dev BNP Yammer. And we can loop in obviously Jonathan there if Jonathan is missing your questions around the sample. Personally, I like the Yammer group way of communicating much more because there's already 3,500 members within the group. And the other people can follow up on the questions as well, because quite often when there's a question for somebody on, let's say, some technology or a challenge, other people are hitting the same issue as well. So they can actually then find the same answer already in Yammer groups. So that's highly beneficial.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. If folks have a question, let's share that knowledge with each other.
Yep. Cool. But I think that's it then for this webcast. Excellent job, excellent sample, and I really like the simplicity of the things. Even though it seems by first impression it's like, oh, this is highly complex stuff, but it actually isn't, and it really shows the power of the service and the graph as well.
Yep. Yeah. Once you get some of those sort of fundamental bits in place, it becomes much easier, much nicer to work with. All of a sudden, you find yourself going, "Man, this is really great. This is no problem at all to implement, and we get great data out of it, and life is good."
True. And to be fair, I was just telling that to Jonathan before we started the recording. I've been banging my head against the wall around some of the plumbing earlier today as well, because I had, for some reason, one sample just it has some issues, and I just can't figure it out. Which is that's always the frustrating part, the basic plumbing to get that one work. Mm-hmm. But after the authentication models and all of the authentication, you get the access token thing is to work, then you can concentrate on the business logic. And we are absolutely looking into having more guidance and samples around that one as well. So simply explain how to make that happen more efficiently.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Cool. But anyway, thanks for everybody who's joining and watching the video in Channel 9 or wherever you're actually watching the video. And we'll come up with the new stuff sooner or later. Thank you, Jonathan. Great demo and great sample and great contribution for the community.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, everybody.
Cheers.